I believe that if preachers or preacher-like men ran things would go better. Now, do I say that out of personal bias? Because I'm a preacher. Don wants everybody to be like him. No, I really don't. Because I don't know how to run businesses and I don't know how to run a nation. So I know I might have a hard time convincing some of you of that. But let me ask you this. Who or what are preachers? They are men who devote their lives to teaching people knowledge, pondering and setting in order and seeking out many wise sayings, seeking acceptable words, words that are upright, even words of truth. Preachers devote their lives to speaking words that are like goads and are like well-driven nails given by one shepherd. And that's no easy task, for they have found that reading many books has no end. And when they read many books, it tires them out. Preachers persuade us that the most important thing in life is to fear God and keep His commandments, knowing that such is our all. And knowing further that God will bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it is good or evil. Now, if you have someone who thinks like that and speaks like that, running things, then that organization is going to go well. My proof of that are presidents. Presidents of both colleges or universities and presidents of the United States. Our colleges did well when the presidents were preachers. And our nation has done well when the presidents spoke like preachers. However, when our colleges, Christian colleges, replaced preachers with fundraisers, then wisdom started to disappear. And when we quit electing preacher-sounding presidents and replaced them with, well, fundraisers, then things were not going as well in America as they had at one time. Years ago, I visited a friend of mine in Texas, and I told him my opinion on this matter, and he seemed skeptical. And we were having this discussion as we were driving to the home of an older brother who worshiped with him in that place in Texas. And then we got to the brother's house and we visited with him, had a long visit, talked about various things. And somehow this conversation, the same thing was brought up by the older brother. And he made the same points that I had just made to my friend. This is my way of introducing the words of the preacher identified for us in the Bible book, of Ecclesiastes. The book begins with these words, chapter 1, verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. A king who became a preacher. A preacher who was a king. And then later in that chapter, verse 12, he again said, I, the preacher, was king over Israel in Jerusalem. In both cases, he identified himself first as a preacher, then as a ruler of a nation. And that could only be one person, that or one man. That would be King Solomon. And when Solomon functioned as he called himself a preacher, He did well as king, and he found fulfillment in life. But when he ceased acting like a preacher, he found misery and depression. I want to show you the meaning of life as the Holy Spirit used Solomon to explain to us what life is all about in the book of Ecclesiastes. The title of the book we get from the Latin, which is also taken from the Greek version of the Old Testament. Maybe you've heard someone say the Greek word for church is ekklesia, and here we have Ecclesiastes, they're related. And all that comes from the Hebrew word that first appears there in Ecclesiastes 1:1, which means an addresser of the assembly. So that's why it's been translated as the preacher. There is no other book, as you probably know, in the entire scriptures that is quite like the book of Ecclesiastes, these ponderings of King Solomon. He takes us on a journey, and he takes us to the very places where we think happiness, meaning, and fulfillment are, only to show us that they all disappoint. In fact, he shows us that even if God is the one who has given you the particular thing that you're looking to find happiness, fulfillment, and meaning in, even if God's the one who has given it to you, if you're looking for it in that thing, he'll argue, it'll still disappoint. You'll still find it to be futile. They're all vain. If we miss the most important thing in life. Solomon pieces together his thoughts, his journey, in a masterful way. I have recommended a book to you before, and even got a copy and put it in the church library, you know, right over here, called Words of Delight, A Literary Introduction to the Bible, which I recommend everyone read. It was written by Leland Ryken. And in that book, he says this about Ecclesiastes. The book of Ecclesiastes is one of the greatest masterpieces in all of literature, and also one of the most misunderstood books in the Bible. I think he's right. It really is a masterpiece, and it really is misunderstood. Ryken also quoted some other authors who attested to the greatness of Ecclesiastes. The first one he quotes here that I'll read to you is from the author of Moby Dick. Herman Melville called it the truest of all books, while the American novelist Thomas Wolfe described it as the highest flower of poetry, eloquence, and truth, and the greatest single piece of writing I have known. So have you ever read the book of Ecclesiastes? With men like this telling us just how high it is, I'd encourage you to read it. The book of Ecclesiastes shows us life under the sun. In fact, that expression, under the sun or under heaven, appears 33 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. If you view life strictly from under the sun, with no regard for what is above the sun, not considering what is going on in heaven, then Solomon says, here's what your life will be like. To live life with any world view other than a God-centered one proves vain. Now I want you to listen to this from Ecclesiastes chapter 2. I'm going to quote verse 18, and then six verses later, verse 24. I want you to notice how Solomon addresses the same subject, that of our employment, and how he'll approach it from two vastly different vantage points. Ecclesiastes 2:18. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me." 6 verses later, verse 24, he said this: "Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God." What he just did right there is very typical of the book of Ecclesiastes. First, Solomon said he hated his labor. And then, almost in the same breath, he said, you should enjoy good in your labor. So what's going on? Well, in the first instance, verse 18, he's showing if you view life strictly from under the sun, here's what your attitude will be. Here's what life will be to you. Then in verse 24, he spoke of life as a gift from the hand of God, who is, by the way, above the sun. If you only look at life from under the sun, you're going to be miserable. If you look at life from above the sun, you'll be happy and you'll enjoy good in all your labor. So in other words, two people can work at the same job, having everything in life equal, but one is miserable and the other one's happy. And it's all because of how they view life. One views life with the eyes of the flesh, and the other views life with the eyes of the Spirit. So how do you view life? We journey with Solomon, but not to a place on earth. The journey happens in the mind. It's a journey of the mind. And where do our minds go on our daily journeys? Solomon searches for something intensely. And as we travel with him, he wants us to listen to what he has to say, and he also wants us to see what he saw. Let me give you some examples. Chapter 2, you're probably still there. Verse 13. Watch his language. "Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness." So he's walking down, you know, just like if you're walking down the street and you see a house, you see some flowers, you see someone out in their yard, you see a car parked in front of a house. That's what he's going to do. He'll say, "I saw this, and then I saw this," and he wants you to see that. Look at verse 24, which we just read earlier. "Nothing is better for a man that he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God." Chapter 3, verse 16. "Moreover, I saw under the sun. In the place of judgment, wickedness was there. In the place of righteousness, iniquity was there." Chapter 4, verse 4. Again, see what he saw. He says, "Again, I saw that for all toil and every skillful work a man is envied by his neighbor. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind." So it's almost as though he's going down this road and he keeps taking turns. You know, "I went down there and then again I saw this. Went down there for a while and tells us about it. And then I turned down this way and I saw this." He just does it all throughout the book. Again, look at verse 7, same chapter, chapter 4. "Then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun." Verse 15, "I saw all the living who walk under the sun. They were with the second youth who stands in his place." Oh, that's an interesting one. I always like that one, because it talks about new kings. Here's a king, and people get tired of the old one, and they want change. And they get the new king, and they stick with him, and then they don't like him either. And so they want a new one. That's been going on for a long time. Chapter 8, verse 10. Then I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness, and they were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This also is vanity. Verse 17. Then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. See, I just gave you several passages there. You know, there's 12 chapters in this book. He just says, I saw this, and I saw that, and I saw this. Picture in your mind what he saw. Because sometimes he gives you literal pictures. You know, I saw people, and I saw this happening, and I saw that happening. I'd like to encourage you to start reading the book of Ecclesiastes this week. And go with Solomon on his journey, and Lord willing, beginning next week, I will start preaching through a series of sermons on this wonderful, wonderful book. You've probably heard me say several times that America, in my judgment, needs the understanding of the book of Ecclesiastes more than any other book. If someone were to ask me, Don, how do I deal with my fellow Americans? What can I say to them? What do they need to hear? I mean, obviously they need to hear the whole Bible, but we just can't throw the whole Bible at them. What do you have a suggested reading in here? Out of those 66 books, I'd say we need the book of Ecclesiastes more than any other. And the reason for that is that Solomon went on a journey of living by purely worldly values and pleasures, just what many Americans do, and sometimes we find ourselves as Christians doing the same thing. But Solomon shows that if you leave out the main ingredient, your life will be futile. So read the book to find the missing ingredient, which he does reveal several times along the way. In fact, in some of the passages I've already read tonight, he shows you what the missing ingredient is. He doesn't wait to the end. But all along the way, he says, this is it. This is it. He says it the same thing all the way through. You may have everything that you believe that will bring happiness and fulfillment. But Psalm 49 explains that all those things mean nothing in the day of death. When you turn on the television, when you listen to the world speak, when you hear your friends speak out in the world and so on, what do they say is important in life? What do they say you need to have more than anything else? Well, listen to what Psalm 49 says, and I'll just read verses 6 through about 8 or so. Those who trust in their wealth and boast in the multitude of their riches, none of them can by any means redeem his brother, nor give to God a ransom for him. For the redemption of their souls is costly, and it shall cease forever. Actually, I'm going to go through verse 10. That he should continue to live eternally and not see the pit. For he sees wise men die, likewise the fool and the senseless person perish, and leave their wealth to others. You know, a good example of that, of a man who just died, was Michael Jackson. You know, wealth, materialistically speaking, that you and I just can't even imagine. I know they say he was in debt, but he still had a tremendous amount of wealth. He still lived like he was wealthy anyways. But what happened? At 50 years of age, he's gone. All the money of his family couldn't help him. The truth of Psalm 49 is powerful, and it goes together good with the book of Ecclesiastes. Remember this. Job had everything but lost it all and remained faithful. Solomon had it everything and kept it all, but temporarily lost his faith. But I believe that he came back to it again. That's the point of Ecclesiastes. And Job lost everything, but but it eventually all came back to him again. So then, where are you on your journey of life? Where are you? When you read Ecclesiastes, you're going to find Solomon taking you to the very spot, perhaps, where you are, if it's not on the journey of God. Is there something we can do to encourage you tonight? Can we pray for you? Can we help you get back on that journey? Can we help you, excuse me, to make life meaningful? That you may have a full life, regardless of who you are or what you have or don't have in life? If we can bless you, come forward now, please, as we stand and sing.